Great, thank you. I just want to give sort of a note to my colleague here, Gene Schensel, who is the, at the time that I was working at the Institute for Community Research, was the executive director, and she's also the founder there. But the Institute is an organization that I had the privilege to work directly for about 4 years, and I still continue to collaborate with them. But it's a community-based research organization that's not-for-profit that's really, its goals are really to work with partners in the city of Hartford to help understand more of the context of what's going on there and to improve the lives for the citizens of the community. And they do that through a number of city, state, and federally funded grants. There we go. And then no relationships on either part to disclose. So this the particular study that I'm going to talk about is was a NIDA-funded study, Club Drugs, Resource Inequity, and Health Risk in Urban Youth. In this particular study, we were looking at young adults 18 to 30, and this was sort of a follow-on to another study that we did looking at 16 to 24-year-olds, and in that particular study, looking at polydrug use among young adults. And then we sort of wrote this study as a follow-on to that to examine some more of the different kinds of things that we saw in that study related to violence, and also very much interested in the diffusion of ecstasy and other club drugs into the urban Hartford network. And so we were interested in looking at this. And this was a mixed methods, ethnographic and a quantitative epidemiological study. So we collected data on drug use, friendship networks, and family community attachment and health. And in the sample, we had 548 young adults who completed the survey, and then we followed them up at T equals 15 months. But for this particular study, I'm going to be looking at the baseline information. And so we were, just a little bit about the context around Hartford. And I was living in Providence at the time, so I commuted back and forth there. So I'm not from Hartford. But Gene Schensel is very much from Hartford, and it was really interesting for me to sort of get immersed into that community a little bit. And it is an interesting community that's undergone a lot of transition, particularly during the early part of the 2000s when I was working there. Very high rates of child poverty, very high high school dropout rates. Also, a very multi-ethnic city. About 16% of the city is white, and also high rates of unemployment in the city, and a lot of gentrification and those kind of activities going on that was causing a lot of displacement and these other kinds of things. So, very interesting context. And so, we collected in the survey these different individual, peer, family, and community level. Factors. It was a fairly extensive survey, and we brought the people in and essentially did face-to-face interviews with them and filled out the surveys. But we really wanted to look at this from a very ecological approach. Oops. There we go. So the hypotheses that our focus for this particular presentation is on violence. Predictors of violence consist of a combination of individual, peer, family, and community-level factors. And then looking at different types of violence exposure, which I'll talk about here in just a second. And then we also looked at the effect of ethnicity and any impact of that on the outcomes. This is not intuitive. The left button takes you forward. There we go. The recruiting methods, what we did was we used our respondent-driven sampling because we wanted to make sure that we got a good cross-section of Hartford. So we recruited seeds from the different geographic areas inside of the city and then used the respondent-driven sampling, which we essentially got the seeds, and they referred other people into the study, and then those people referred others into the study. And what Heckathorn and some others have shown is that when you do this, you end up with a sample that's pretty representative of the population that you're looking for, and a very good way to reach or to get at hard-to-reach people. And so we use that, and in the final study, the 548, we sort of mapped that all out, and we did get pretty good coverage of the entire city of Hartford. And so the field recruiters screened the participants They did the, again, face-to-face interviews at baseline and 15 months later. And then for this particular study, I selected out males, which is 332. So the sample consisted mostly over 50% Hispanic Latino, with the next being Black African American, and then white males. It's about a 50-35-15 split, I think. Mean age 21 years. And some of these other are very reflective of what's going on in Hartford. Low monthly income, 63% of them don't have a high school education. And then also some fairly, an unemployment rate of 61%, and also some fairly high involvement in drug selling activities, and also some report of gang membership. Drug use characteristics, the mean number of drugs, last 30 days was 2. We're very interested in poly drug use among these youth, even though we didn't screen in this particular study for that. And then the number of days of different substances, alcohol and marijuana, 6 and 14 respectively. And I just put dust, cocaine, and ecstasy because we were really interested in the drugs that were showing up from our ethnographic research that were associated with club-type activities. So what we did was, in the violence exposure, we took a number of items, which I'll have a slide here in a second, and we looked at, they were dichotomous, and just asked them about their exposure to that and respond either yes or no to either witnessing, perpetrating that violence, or being a victim of the violence. And then so what we did was we used SAS-PolyCore, which just allows you to do factor analysis with dichotomous items. And essentially, everything sort of fell out the way that we had anticipated, but we did end up with a fourth factor that appeared to be more of a serious violence exposure. Some of the items around being robbed or shot that had come out of that and sort of formed its own factors. So we ended up with 4 different. And these here show the mean number of events and the range for the different kinds of violence. I'll show some other things. I think what was striking to me is the fairly high level of violence exposure among this particular population.
Eric?
Yes?
This is 8.7 events lifetime?
Yes. We just asked them if they had ever been involved with this particular activity, so it would be lifetime. Here's the items that ended up on the survey that we asked them about. I won't read them all to you, but it, again, these were items that were adapted from existing surveys, but also things that we were seeing in our ethnographic research in the city itself. And so we wanted to make sure that we tried to capture the range of what we were seeing. Again, all of these items, we just asked them the same item, but just asked whether they witnessed it, perpetrated, or a victim. Here's just documented some of the most frequent types of exposure by category for witnessing, seeing people be beaten up, bullying someone, or threatening somebody without a weapon, fairly high in terms of number of people that reported that. Also high for perpetrating, beating or physically attacking a non-family member, threatening someone without using a weapon, and destroying someone else's property. These are things that people had done to others. And then victimization, being threatened, property was damaged or destroyed, physically attacked, or should be attacked, or beaten by someone. And then that fourth factor, which was a serious violence exposure, 45% being robbed, 30% being shot at, and 31% harm someone with a weapon other than a gun. So, again, fairly high level of violence exposure with these men. So I ran a series of hierarchical multiple regressions, essentially using, I ran 4 of them, each one of those being the particular form of violence and the number of activities, so the outcome being the number of occasions of that particular exposure, put age and ethnicity in all the models, individual factors, the number of drugs used, number of drugs ever sold, attitudes towards drug use, ethnic identity, optimism, usefulness of risky behaviors, somatic or physical symptoms, and club party attendance. At the peer level, friends' use of substances, friends' use of ecstasy and dust, and then peer pressure to use substances, family, trust and loyalty, importance of family, and then some community-related factors around interactions with legal system, negative interactions with law enforcement, connections to neighborhood, and connections to city. And just to note that all of these were determined, or I would say the majority of them, all of them were significant predictors of the form of violence, at least one of those across the board. So the constellation of these all seem to be, at least in a univariate sense, related to violence exposure. So the results of the models here, these are the ones sort of at the end of the model when everything, when all is said and done, and what sort of surfaced to the top. For the witness exposure, higher ethnic identity, lesser perceived importance of family, and more negative interactions with the police, higher perpetration, and something I think that was also interesting is these R-squareds are not insignificant. In some cases, there's quite a bit of explained variance, which was interesting. So in terms of perpetration, lower age, more drugs ever sold, higher perceived usefulness of risky activities, it's kind of like a perceived risk measure, more somatic symptoms, higher frequency of club attendance, friends' use of more substances, lesser importance of friends and family, and more negative interactions with the police, all with perpetration, victimization, more drugs ever sold, less favorable attitudes towards drug use, more somatic symptoms, higher frequency of club attendance, friends' use of more substances, and more pressure from friends to use. And then the last one, which was the serious violence exposure, being at black or African American, more drugs ever sold, more reported somatic symptoms, higher frequency of club attendance, and lower importance of close family and friends, and more negative interactions with police. So it's kind of interesting because you sort of begin to see, and I'll talk a minute here about some of the patterns that seem to be emerged around this, regardless of type of violence. And again, the levels of violence quite high. Black African American males more likely to witness violence and be exposed to most forms of violence. The Hispanic Latinos tended to be younger and also more likely to be perpetrators, and this was consistent with ethnographic research that had been done that showed in that particular time that population would tended to report carrying guns more often than some of the others. An increased club-going attendance also, very interestingly, is associated almost across the board with violence exposure, so it's kind of an irony, I guess, that's a primary social outlet for urban youth and also for suburban youth, but also seem to be some kind of nexus for at least exposure to violence, and not going anywhere close to saying that clubs cause violence, because we don't believe that. Yeah. Somatic symptoms strongly associated with all forms of violence exposure as well. And then those who are victims tend not to be involved with the criminal justice system or have negative interactions with the police. And I think just overall from this this particular the quantitative study here, and also the ethnographic work that we've been doing, is really that violence is a very multifaceted kind of thing. You can't say that drugs cause violence or clubs cause violence. But there seems to be issues related to engagement with the community, and also looking again at some of the dynamics going in at Hartford and looking at sort of violence at a structural level. Now, I have a quote that I think captures some of what it is that we're looking at, that you have to look at all of those things in a context related to understand the effects of violence in that community. And here's the one here, and the second sentence, I think, structural violence occurs wherever people are disadvantaged by political, legal, economic, or cultural traditions. Structural violence produces suffering and death as often as direct violence does, so the damage is slower, more subtle, more common, and more difficult to repair. And I think that really sums up in a really good way the type of work that we're trying to do in Hartford and try to really understand better what those impacts from structural violence are. And then just further, some of the things where we want to go here, really looking, I think, a lot more detail at some of the somatic symptoms. We collected also information on depression, so I think we're going to dig into that a little bit more and figure out the nature of the relationship with the somatic symptoms or mental health issues and violence. And urban males of color in particular suffer from an equitable burden of health-related problems associated with violence. This is particularly true in Hartford. Drug use may also be a potential mediator and the intersections of drug use, mental and physical health issues, and structural violence needs to be better understood, which is part of the thing that we're doing. There do not appear to be many significant differences by ethnicity, but how the effects of violence exposure differentially impact males and females is important to examine, and that's actually sort of one of the next places that we're going to go with there. And then I think in some ways we think about this linking into this this kind of relatively new issue of the school-to-prison pipeline, looking at sort of the zero-tolerance policies in schools and what impact that those have and impact of policies like No Child Left Behind, what those impacts are farther down the road that we may not see at the immediate time.